How long did my birth last?
Forever. No, actually, you were pretty easy.
Really?
Like 5 hours. Really?
Well, I mean, from the husband's perspective.
I was 12 hours?
I start at 5 o'clock.
She's waiting for your Nina, Sonia, and I.
Mm-hmm. The 21st, I start at 5 o'clock.
In the morning?
In the afternoon.
The afternoon?
My water broke, and I start at construction. I call you dad. My mother said, there is a cabin over here. By 10, no, eventually, they take me to the hospital because it was like, we were coming really quick, you know that, from practice. And so on.
That's 5 hours.
Wow. No, 14, because you didn't born till 7:05 next
day. No, you said that it started at 5 and you went to the hospital at 10.
You didn't come out till 7:05. Dr. Amina, I don't think she's going to have her tonight. Take her sleeping pills. I don't think she's going to need a ride tonight. I don't think she's going to have it tomorrow. Meanwhile, you obviously like with me and she's like, well, I think you have it.
The reason we didn't think that, I mean, we were ready to believe that it wasn't going to happen was because we hadn't even started waiting for you to come out.
You came early, like I would.
So, was Emmy supposed to be in December then?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, was I supposed to be born in November?
No. Actually, you came late.
So you are, but at 10:30, something like that night, she was knocking in your Tata and Mina's bedroom, trying to wake them up. And she's like, they're not waking up. And she finally got their attention. And so they start getting themselves ready. Take me. Tata's half asleep. Here we go. There was a cross. There was a road, like we were coming, and there's like a road in here. It's a cross road, right? Stop light here, stop light here, stop light here, stop light here.
An intersection.
And your Tata, she's gonna run that red light, right? Because he was totally asleep. But we're like, red light. So he's like, okay. So he stopped in the middle of the cross. Right in the middle. I'm like, we're in the middle of the intersection, and your Tata's running.
Somebody shook him to wake him up.
So I got to the hospital, Tata and Nina, they passed out in the couch over there in the waiting area. And me and my mother, we went in, and here we go.
Is this the wrong time to tell you that I've been recording for the intro to the San Carlos Computer Club? This is Scott Stimson and his family just finishing dinner. So here we are at the end of dinner. I'm Scott Stimson, the host.
I'm the one who pushed these kids out.
They didn't hear the story. I'm cutting that out.
Oh, okay.
You're cutting it out?
This is...
Don't cut it out.
This is...
I am the first push...
Mix Emily Stimson. And this is...
I was the best of me from November.
That's the second push.
Bibiana. And we're all here to say, tech on.
Tech on.
Spent most of the morning with the air conditioner off. I've only just turned it on, and that's because of the trailer, if I was outside, I wouldn't need any extra. It's a great time. I got pants on. What can I say? I got pants on.
Good boy now.
My favorite temperatures. Well, it looks like everything's working. Oh, did I actually say that out loud? I should keep that to myself.
Morning, everybody. Morning.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Scott. My friendly technical advisor guy.
I added your questions to our list.
Thank you. Did you see
I see
my,
Cheryl's
my...
in the dock right now. Did I see your...
Hey. Did you see my answer to why Pluto isn't a planet?
I saw the link. I didn't read the article yet.
Oh. I sent it to Scott as a link. I don't believe I put it in the document.
But the thought is that it's not unique.
Yes.
Which is a consideration in the other article that we were looking at.
Yeah.
That it's just not unique, and so why would it be considered a planet? And that ruffled the feathers.
There's other similar objects in its near area, so they say it can't really be a planet on the planet, because there's other ones just like it, so to speak. I think is what the gist is.
Yeah, from the way I understood it, it's If you're going to use these classifications to classify Pluto a planet, then there's hundreds of other things floating around in our solar system that meet the same requirements.
Yeah, the same criteria.
Right, and we're not going to have hundreds of planets. What planets by this definition?
Well, I guess the school kids couldn't make a little acronym for hundreds. It would be total chaos.
I think that's where the sentiment is coming from. Sorry, Paul, go ahead.
Well, that's the danger of knowing too much about our system.
It is, Paul.
I'm trying something new over here. Sorry, it just happened right at the same. We got 5 minutes until we officially start. I'm playing around with the YouTube channel at the exact same time.
I want to announce that we have now joined the complete automation of the world. We have a ring doorbell.
All right.
so now they're going to be able to tell exactly what's going on in the world on my doorstep.
That's right. Now, in Canada, did you have the option to let your local law enforcement have access to the records?
No, it didn't say anything about that.
Okay.
We're a socialist country. We don't allow that sort of nonsense. Oh, wait a minute. It's the other way around, isn't it?
I was going to say, isn't that like a terms of service?
I don't know. It did not ask anything. By the way, Jimmy, another thing to show. Where is it? There it is.
Migration 000 to migration.
All right.
You're going to be out of there momentarily.
Tomorrow. Is today tomorrow?
We get our test this afternoon, our negative test.
Awesome. My other daughter is home because her grade, somebody's tested positive, and so they're all shut down for 2 weeks now.
Wait a minute, Cheryl, we got to get off this meeting. We can't meet him. He's got a close contact.
That's right.
I already checked in for my appointment.
Yes, so she gets to do the next 14 days in the house.
It's 14 days?
Well, it's 2 weeks, right?
Ours is only 10 days.
Oh, yeah?
And it's only recommended. Yeah, and they're not keeping track of anything in the schools.
Well, this is all school following federal mandate.
We don't have any mandates in schools whatsoever, so if your child tests positive, you don't have to inform anybody of that fact at the moment. Some of your fanatics down there would love that. Literally, one of our grandchildren can have a student that has tested positive in their classroom and nobody's notified at all, and they don't have to stay home. Here's another kicker: if your wife is delivering a baby, and you have tested positive, or her support person has tested positive, They are allowed into the hospital.
Wow. That's not very helpful.
That's our provincial government, asshole premier.
That's like AIDS, where not only are you the only one to know that you have AIDS, your doctor doesn't have to know you have AIDS.
Wow, when was that, Paul?
That was in the 90s. That sounds nuts. It was such a stigma, and the gays felt put upon by being stigmatized, and the other thing was, when they started testing drugs to modify AIDS, they were doing a double blind test, and the gays found out that it was a double blind test and said, oh no, you're not going to give a placebo to half of us. We all want the drug. We all want to get better. And they did. Not that they got better, but they all got drugs.
They all got the drugs, yeah. Well, and now it's just amazing how far that's come, because that's just not considered, that's considered almost wiped out. At least, at the very least, they can, you can take medication now to make it completely go away so that you're not infectious and well, the, live a long life.
The good thing is that before AIDS, medical personnel were pretty casual. You didn't have to wear gloves to give shots. Most things you didn't wear gloves for. You just washed your hands afterwards. But because of AIDS, the person not having to tell you that they had AIDs, they developed the universal precaution. And now they just wear gloves for everything.
Hey, we're having too much fun. I didn't realize we're just about ready to start the actual meeting. I've put up a countdown clock that is counting down as we speak. What's our group look like as we open up our meeting to the internet? There is the six of us. Chester, you got in with no problems. Actually, everybody got in without me having to authorize them. That was great. 30 seconds to go.
Getting ready for blast off.
That's right.
Hey, is Captain Kirk in space or not? I thought it was today.
I haven't followed up on that news, but I did see a funny meme that showed him in a yellow shirt with all his crew in red, and the caption caption read, "Blue Origin is starting to get nervous." Captain Kirk. William Shatner's crew is starting to get nervous. We're live now on the internet, but we've been having a conversation for the last 15 minutes. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, and this is the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday at 10 o'clock to discuss tech topics and things that matter to us in no specific organizational agenda. How are you guys doing this morning? Welcome.
Wonderful.
Great.
That's a great
scene because my dog is barking his forehead off upstairs.
All this tech seems to be working. I did it again. I'm jinxing myself by saying such, but I think we're ready to go. As per usual, I have shared a document that has some topics in it. Most of the topics in it at the moment are follow-ups from last week's meeting. And maybe you guys want to just take a moment. We'll just run down some real quick stuff here I thought you'd find interesting. I found the link from Johnson. It is Johnson & Johnson's Johnson & Johnson's PR, but it is their release that's talking about the booster. And what I found interesting in it was that it was talking about the effectiveness of the original shot and then threw the booster information in as well. Here in the first paragraph, it says, "New data also shows that protection against COVID-19 increases when a booster shot of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is administered. The safety profile of the vaccine remains consistent and was generally well tolerated when administered as a booster." And then somewhere in here, it starts getting to something about 95%, bringing it up to the same effectiveness as the Pfizer mRNA. Thank you, Cheryl. That's exactly what I'm thinking of. So that link I've put in that document, if you guys are interested in having access to that, we were talking about boosters last week, and we were also talking about AstraZeneca, and I found this chart that pits AstraZeneca against the Pfizer vaccine, showing the differences that it was a quick, easy thing to look at, but it basically says, yes, it is a different style vaccine. On my screen, it shows nothing. There we go. So it talks about the two, and then it's got a table here showing the difference in dosages and efficiency, efficacy, authorization. So, yeah. Stop me if you guys have any thoughts on this stuff. I just thought this is a great follow-up to what we were talking about last week. I realized I had not paid much attention to AstraZeneca,
article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday said that Pfizer is by far the best of all of them.
Oh, compared to Moderna as well? Chester, how did it pit against Moderna, since they're very similar technologies?
As best I can recall reading it yesterday, it was saying that everybody wants that because it is the best. It wasn't really compared to other available vaccines. It was just, it's the best and the most popular.
The most popular, yeah. Most sought after. Yeah, it's probably because they were the first ones to be approved, right? They've had, but as time has gone on, I've seen studies that showed that the Moderna, being of the same technology, was testing out at having a longer efficiency period than the Pfizer. The Pfizer was, I mean, I guess in our language, the Pfizer would be needing a booster sooner than the Moderna, from what I had been reading.
There's a problem with one of them. I don't remember which one, but in certain young men, it causes a heart problem. But I don't remember which one it was. I'm not a young man, so I'm not really concerned.
There was one, I think it was the AstraZeneca, some strokes identified in otherwise healthy 40-year-olds. So it was the AstraZeneca.
Is that what caused it to be delayed for approval, or had its approval taken away?
Well, I'm not sure what's going on in the United States. I don't think you guys have approved it yet.
Yeah.
It was approved in Europe, and it was approved in Canada, and it was given in Canada. And those people that have AstraZeneca as their first shot were allowed to have Moderna or Pfizer for their second shot, but the United States is not allowing anybody. They do not consider somebody that has mixed vaccinations fully vaccinated.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So everybody in our province was told, the first one that comes available, take it. So my cousin, a lot of people, our son, whatever, has AstraZeneca as his first one. And then the second one was Moderna.
Wow.
If he wants to travel, he has to get another shot of Moderna or Pfizer, so that he's got two mRNAs on board to be fully vaccinated.
As soon as this meeting is over, I get my booster.
So that's your third shot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pfizer.
Yeah, we've had three Pfizers, but it's still considered making us full because of immune suppression and different things. So they don't call it a booster, the one that I've had, that we've had.
Well, mine's called a booster, but I'm also going to get a flu shot while I'm at it.
Yeah, we got our flu shots last week.
So in that article, it shows here that U.S. authorization for AstraZeneca is not authorized still. And it says its efficacy is around 70%. That's really interesting. And so what you guys did in Canada is you took one technology and then another technology. Or your cousin, was it you were talking about? Took the AstraZeneca and then took the Pfizer or the Moderna? Interesting. What else do we have on the list of follow-ups? There's a, I don't know if it's the greatest article in the world, but there's an article from USA Today that's talking about the IRS's tracking $600 activities, and it's basically it's a USA Today article, if you could imagine. It's like the shallowest of liberal points of view. There's not a lot of content in here, and it says it all right in the headline. Their opinion is it exaggerates reality. And so I always think of you.
I quit subscribing to the USA Today and went over to Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. And actually, at least in publications like the Arizona Republic, which I read, and the Wall Street Journal, which I read, they very clearly are reporting opinion pieces because none of this has happened. And this is what this USA Today opinion is it's basically an opinion piece. But it's all coming from the side of, don't worry, Everything will be fine. We're all okay.
The latest iteration is that they realized the $600 situation was ridiculous, so they raised that in their proposed ultimate law to $10,000, so that every transaction of $10,000 or more is reported to the IRS.
It's a proposal.
It's not law.
That's because $600 for his pocket chain.
That $10,000 rule has been in place for decades.
No, the $10,000 rule is only cash, and that's only cash deposited, not cash withdrawal. So the $10,000 rule was for the purpose of tracing, where you're getting rid of drug money.
Laundering,
yeah. But that was only applicable to cash.
I had a run-in one time because
I withdrew $10,000 cash, and they wanted to report me to the IRS, and I objected. And they researched it and concluded that no, it did not have to be reported, only deposits.
Well, until now, if this new law passes, you would actually be subject to it, Chester, wouldn't you? You'd have to report that.
Yes, even if I move from one account to another, I would be subject to it, which I do all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I have trouble not believing that this was just an intentional overreach so that when it came back, they could fall back on a number like 10,000. It would be like, well, that's okay. We're already doing that kind of stuff.
Well, that could well be, but I can certainly tell you the banks are all upset about it because they don't want to be responsible or have to do the work.
Yeah.
Well, and this, I did not read, Chester, you're the one reporting to me that they've scaled it back to 10,000 with the new legislation. Did you get an impression of how close that is to becoming a thing?
No, it's a part of the $3.5 trillion bill. It's a part of that. And so it's not independent. It's in that package. And who knows what will ultimately become of that.
Well, this is the reason government should go slow, right? Is that people should have time to analyze all aspects of it and find things that like this that are incongruent with the way we want to go forward.
There is significant money provisions in this bill that will just shock the hell out of you. Like giving citizenship to all illegals.
Well, that'll be interesting to see how it shakes out, to find out where we're at the end of that, whether that would stay, if this was so important to get passed that would stay, or how it would end up being amended so that it could be passed. It seems like when we finally get a law, we get a law because nobody's happy with it. Like there's... We've finally shaped it in a way that there's a piece of it that everybody is not happy with.
Well, where's Judy? She's the one that usually is on my case because I'm conservative.
Yeah, Judy's not with us. We'll have to tell her we're missing her.
God, Chester, I never knew you were a conservative. That's kind of shocked. Absolutely shocked.
I've got one more follow-up thing from last week, and that is proof of work versus proof of stake. And I set out diligently to find an analogy or a metaphor to share the difference between these two concepts in the Bitcoin currencies and one over the other. And I did not find anything that I felt was simplistic enough to make sense even to myself. What I found, though, is I found a write-up that looks to me completely sponsored by Coinbase, because Coinbase is a Bitcoin that has switched from proof of work to proof of stake, like we were talking about last week. And this article feels very, very one-sided, because it's in favor of proof of stake and gives you the reasons why, and it doesn't go into great detail. But what it does do is it makes it, it's very approachable and digestible as a topic as you read it. You won't get lost in this information, but you will see that it's very slided towards, let's switch to proof of stake. And guess what? Coinbase does proof of stake. So if you keep that in mind, this is a good intro to these two topics. And in a nutshell, what they're basically saying is that we've taken the Bitcoin algorithm and we've made a couple of specific changes to it that make it easier to on electricity, make it easier on centralization, make it safer or it, while still being safe. And so, they've done something with the limitation. Like this concept that's very, very a bit concerning is that there is a perpetual mining possibility at lower electric rates. And the work that is being done to create that Bitcoin isn't what it's based on. So the algorithm has been tweaked so that it doesn't require as many cycles as the traditional Bitcoin. So it doesn't require as much electricity. And the proof model, what do they call it? This consensus model is still being achieved, but the validation isn't based on the amount of work that's been put into it. It's based on something else. And that's it. That's about what you can get from this. But it's got some good, quick, easy things that show proof of work versus proof of stake. But it does talk about it on a field of adopting towards the other standard. And why would you get into Bitcoin when you would get into this? It would be better all the way around.
My understanding is that in China, the miners have all had to leave China because they just cannot afford the electricity that they're using. And where they're moving to are to countries which have hydroelectric power as being a substantially cheaper source of power than China would all be coal-generated power.
Wait, Chester, do you remember from last week we were talking? This is actually a follow-up from last week. And last week we were talking about a bit mining operation that bought a retired coal-burning power plant in Philadelphia to run their operation.
But the problem there is that the price of coal in the recent months has doubled and in some cases tripled, particularly going to China, because of the shipping as well as the mining of the coal. So the problem with coal-powered plant, wherever it is that the price of thermal coal has gone up more than double.
Just very quickly recently, huh?
Yes, and in the case of metallurgical coal, it's up to $120 a ton compared to what it probably used to be, $50 a ton.
Oh, wow. Wow. Those are the kinds of jumps in prices in oil barrels that I remember from my youth growing up in Alaska.
Well, the miners in West Virginia are certainly happier about it. And the same thing for the oil production, which is now a little over $80 a barrel from $20 a barrel just a year ago.
All right. There was one other point about Bitcoin that we were going to make, and I have forgotten what it was. Yep. Nope. Not coming back to me.
I'm leaving it alone. I just don't understand it.
I'm with you, Chester. I think I said before, I'm too old to learn a new sense of money. The money is defined in my being, and it's not Bitcoin.
Right. Well, Bitcoin, that was another thing they talked about here was the amount of time that it takes to make a transaction is directly a direct result of the amount of work it takes to make Bitcoins and to verify Bitcoins. And so proof of stake allows you to make transactions quite a bit faster, making it more practical as a currency. Not that that wasn't the point I forgot. That's just an add-on to I wish I could remember the other point I was going to make. Anyway, there's links to that in the document. Do you guys have the link? I sent it in email if you guys want to look at it. And I'll take a moment and paste it, or I think I pasted it into the in-call messages if you're looking for it right now.
I have a small computer problem, if we're up to that yet.
Sure, sure. What you got going on, Chester?
Well, it's an irritable problem, and it's I'm using the mouse and hitting the back button to go back, particularly if, for example, you're reading a newspaper online and you want to see the detailed article. So you click and you read the detailed article, and then you hit the arrow button to go back, and it jumps twice. And that happens also on Facebook, that I'll hit the back button and it'll jump twice. It becomes irritable because you've lost your place and you got to start all over again.
Can you go forward and come to the page you're trying to get to?
I haven't tried going forward.
In fact, some of the browser configurations, you might not even have the forward button, depending on the way you use your browser. But it would be interesting to see if you could click once on the forward button and go to that page you're looking for. What you're describing sounds like some quick redirect. Like you've gone to a page that what's stored in your cache isn't the actual page. What's stored in your cache is taking you to a page that's taking you to another page.
Well, it's on everything. It's on everything. When I say everything, it's on everything that has to do with Amazon, which is where you go for all your favorites. And
Before we get too deep into it, Chester, have you tried another mouse just to see if it's a hardware problem?
No, I have not. I have not tried. But I suspect it's a mouse. I thought maybe somebody had that experience.
Not every page that you try and back up. I mean, I would verify that that's the case. But if it feels random every page,
it is random.
Like it will. I'd try a different mouse just to start with, because maybe the button's gotten dirty or something like that. It's not making good contact. Yeah, yeah.
I'll try that. I'll see if I can find another mouse and try it.
Yeah, that could be easily a hard, or it's easy to check. You know, you always try and check the easy stuff first, because you don't want
to. Maybe change the batteries might lead me to something.
Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, I think if you've got another mouse, especially if you've got a USB mouse, if you just have one handy hanging around, I'd plug it in and see if you have the same problem.
Will do.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Well, we also, a thing that I started 2 weeks ago is I put a questions list up here in each of the documents, because I thought that there was good conversation to be had just by having topics that we might want to get out and talk about, and how do we start those. And so I added some questions to this list, and then I encouraged you guys to, and Bill hit me with some questions yesterday that I just added to the list, and I thought maybe we'll go through Bill's questions, and if we have time or looking for some other topics, we can go through some of these other questions I've got. But Bill's got on the list here, how do we share iMusic amongst the family, or how do we access the music stored in the family iCloud storage? Do we designate devices somewhere? This is a broad topic for me. It seems to me, the way I understand this to work, and again, I don't have any iDevices in my hands, but if you're on the family account and you sign in with your account, you should see available to you anything that spans that account. Is that not the case? Can you not see Cheryl's collection of stuff when you sign in with your stuff?
I don't know. I can't read. That's a few days back. You want me to remember what I was doing then?
Well, the way your question read was like your Bill, and you've got your Apple account and you're signed into your phone. Can you listen to or watch or read what Cheryl has purchased with her account?
And okay, Scott, what we have is, like, we haven't gotten anything in the I account, the iCloud, that we have bought. I have some music that we bought on a USB stick, and I downloaded it onto the iCloud from my laptop. And what we, you know, what Cheryl wanted was to be able to play it on her phone. And we cannot find the downloaded stuff that downloaded off the USB stick on her phone. We cannot see it.
Okay.
So, or another way to put it is, I have the same music app as Bill does, but I can't figure out if it's logged in or, like, I want it to bring the music out of our shared iCloud. So how do I tell my music app to look at the shared iCloud?
This is incredibly painful.
Mm.
Now, the way that doesn't hurt is to do all your purchasing with iTunes and share that amongst
each
other.
We didn't purchase it. That's just it.
I know. And if you owned the Apple Music, you could have it scan your library for those tracks, and it would give you access to those tracks in the cloud if they were authorized to give you access to them. They wouldn't be your tracks. They would be the Apple's tracks. But they would give you access to it because you have the tracks on your USB drive in your Apple in your computer. That's the easy way all this stuff works. Now, the way that you're doing it without a service from Apple is you're sticking them in the iCloud drive as a file. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes.
Like a folder of files?
Yeah, a folder.
Without having this stuff in front of me, I would imagine what you would need to do is you need to share that folder with Cheryl's account, regardless of whether you're in a family account or not.
How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a real good question, especially between iTunes and Windows-based computers and iPhones. That folder got put into the iCloud on something. I'm assuming it got put into it with a Windows 10 computer.
Yes.
Yeah. And did you do it using their drive mechanism, or did you do it uploading to a web page?
No.
How did you?
I basically plugged in the USB card. Found, you know, took that folder, copied it, and just pasted it into my iCloud drive in the file system. Like when I bring
in the
up,
file system in your Windows machine.
Yeah,
like
when
in
I
Windows
bring up
10.
File Explorer, I have iCloud Drive.
Okay. I believe I've got the same install, so let me take a look at mine here. Let me see, is this reasonable to do? That's what I've got in my iCloud drive, is a duck with an afro. That's funny. Who knew?
Careful what you open up there, lad.
Right, yeah. Ooh, did I make the mistake of trying to open it up? It looks like I've got a picture, and wow, I'm just spinning doing nothing.
This whole sharing of, in this case, it's music. But I had the same problem with the Google Drive, the G Drive, Google Drive, and my photos earlier in the year. Like I couldn't seem to open up photos and find what I was looking for. So,
well, unfortunately, photos is a different issue. I have to share iCloud.
Got to be a way to tell the app to look for the music
family.
In.
Well, I think what you're going to end up doing is I think you're going to have access to the folder, and then you're going to have to put it in your device. And so you'll have your own locally stored copy of the music. So, like, access to it, like, you could see the folder, but I bet you won't be able to play it out of the folder. I bet you'll need to copy it to the device so it'd be stored locally in your memory in your phone. I'm realizing I'm using all these hand gestures and I don't have my picture up, but but it would be in your device is what I'm imagining. Share folders with iCloud drive.
Like, I go into my settings and I go into storage and I see the iCloud. But how do I get into things on the iCloud?
How to share a folder, add people. I think I may have just found the instructions from an iDevice. Let me stick this in the chat here. How to share a folder on an iPad, on a Macintosh, on a PC. Here we go. Open iCloud Drive from navigation panel. Right-click the folder you wish to share. Select iCloud Sharing. In the People field, enter the email address of the people you want to share it with. And then set Share Options and click Apply. So if my computer had not decided to take a dump, let's see if I can share AfroDuck with somebody. Share file. I'm going back over here. I don't know if you guys saw that, but on my Windows computer, I've got iCloud running, and I click on AfroDuck with the right mouse button, and I find Share with iCloud Drive, Share File. This is a file, but I'm sure it works with a folder. And here's a people list. And what's your account? Cheryl, you're going to be my test person.
So my what account?
Your iCloud account. What is it? What's your email address associated with your iCloud account?
Well, there's two, but cherhowthompson@gmail.com works.
What is that? C-H-E-R?
H-O-W-E.
H-O-W-E?
Thompson, T-H-O-M-S-E-N.
S-E-N-S-E-N. At
Gmail.
At what? At Gmail. Okay. All right. I'm really sorry. I think I just doxed your Gmail account. I may go and cut it out of our video later. If we had thousands of people paying attention to us, I would definitely cut it out.
10 minutes left.
Okay, we got 10 minutes left. And who can access? Anyone with the link? Only people I invite permissions can make changes. I'm going to say view only and apply. Okay, so this is working on share. Okay, so that photo should be available to you, as I understand it, in your iCloud Drive. At the very least, you should have an email notification that it's been shared with you to take you to where it is shared. Oh, and going back to my screen for a moment, there's a little share icon next to it in Windows 10. I've got a little gray person next to it indicating that this is shared with someone. I don't know if you can make that out. But
okay, but so where am I supposed to look for it?
So you would go into your iCloud Drive. However you go into your iCloud Drive, if you're on a Windows computer like Bill had set up, like it looks like a disk like I'm doing here, and the way I understand it, you should see that picture in your drive. If that doesn't work, at the very least, your Gmail account should have a notification in it that says somebody has shared this item with you and a link to take you to the item. So you can just follow that email to get to it.
Okay.
And again, I haven't done this stuff on iCloud before. So this is just a real time test of how this stuff works.
So you think that you shared it and that I should see it where?
Well, both, you should have an email and you should see it in your iCloud Drive.
I forgot. I gave you the iCloud Drive for the iPad. I'll go get it. Our call's going to end in 8 minutes.
Okay. Hey, and Fred's with us. Good morning, Fred. You're catching us in the middle of trying to share a file to Cheryl from iCloud. And she's run off to get an iPad. And while she's doing that, are there any other...
Scott?
Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, I had a couple questions about moving my technology to San Carlos.
I was going to say, you've got two more questions on here.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay. I'm sorry.
The one is we have an Amazon Echo Show 8, and I want to know... Will my doorbell ring on it when I'm in San Carlos? If somebody rings my doorbell here,
it should. That's the way it's supposed to work. Now you'll definitely need to keep your internet service live at home.
Yes,
you'll need electricity and internet.
Yeah, well, that's a given right now. It's the internet is staying on this year. Normally we shut it off, but it's staying on.
So I wish you hadn't thrown Show into the equation because it's a Ring doorbell, right?
Yes.
So the Ring doorbell will ring on your phone anywhere you are in the internet.
Okay, so how do I set that to work?
Well, it should just work. There shouldn't be anything special about it. You install the Ring app on your phone?
I got it on my iPad. It shows up on my iPad when somebody pushes the doorbell. So okay. I have to make sure I got the Ring app on my phone. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 electronic devices. I got more electronic devices than you do right now.
I don't know if that's I don't know if you can say that's true.
Well, I don't know. No, 6 counting the smartwatch. Sorry. And that's all within arm reach. Okay, so
Scott has a family. If he counts all of his, I think he might just top you.
And if we do for a person.
Good morning, Mom. We didn't even see you pop on. Did you get here?
Well, for some reason, I don't think I am on your camera. I don't know. I just saw an icon with a big S, assumed it was me.
That is you. You are here. And thank you for joining us. But we are about to get disconnected.
Yes, I know. And I'm ready to go.
Ooh. Oh, excellent.
I think. Who knows?
Anyway, the other question before we pop over to the other side is the Daco. Is it possible for me to take one or two of my Dacos and hook them up in San Carlos?
Is it worth it?
Is it worth it for me to do that?
You have the M5, right? Yes, those little pucks. Yep. So those are really small. If you're comfortable with the app, what I can tell you specifically is that they should work. What I can tell you specifically is that theoretically they should work. You should be able to just pick them up and move them to a new internet connection. And you just run the cable from Telmex or from Mega Cable.
Should plug in. We have Telmex at our place for rent.
And all your devices that have already been connected to it should work. And you can distribute those pucks throughout your rental. And you should have great Wi-Fi while you're in Mexico. Okay.
And I think when I reconnected everything, we lost everything when I changed routers one day. And but I reconnected through the Daco, so all my devices, all my smart devices here in the house work off of the Daco, I believe. So I should be able to access them.
If you take those access points, then your smart devices won't have internet.
If I take the access points.
If you take the mesh network, then
I have three of them. What if I take two of them with me?
It's just about coverage. Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry, Bill. If you take only two, then you'll have to set those up as a separate network.
So how do I access my, say, smart bulbs from San Carlos? What's the easiest way to do that? What I'd like to do is be able to turn them off and on with Alexa. Yes, Alexa. Sorry, stop.
Well, what do you want to turn on and off? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, I want to be able to control my lights when I'm in San Carlos, just to randomly turn them on, turn them off.
Well, you should be able to do that stuff from anywhere on the internet. Okay. I'd be testing that from a coffee shop, from a neighbor's house. I mean, just whenever you have the opportunity, just from self, test and make sure that your devices are able to do that, because something's not configured right. All your Internet of Things services rely on cloud services to give you that feedback. So it's always going out to a third party before it comes to you.
Yes.
And so that means that wherever you are, the real advantage of that is wherever you are, you should be able to get access to your place.
Okay. So I'm going to test that. Yeah. Maybe I'll just leave the Dacos here and not worry about moving them around.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, but at this point, because you have smart lights and a doorbell, and you're actually talking about moving infrastructure, and you probably don't want to think that way in the long run, if that makes sense.
Moving over to the other thing now.
Okay, but I got one more analogy. It would be like pulling the phone wire off your wall so you'd have more phone wire in Mexico. At this point, it's infrastructure. It makes more sense to leave it behind. And if you need a mesh in Mexico, that's just another expense. Or if you need a portable mesh, right? Like maybe you feel like you can afford to buy two access points just so that you have a portable mesh that's ready to be plugged into whatever internet you find. Oh, I see our call is about to end.
Yeah. Okay. So, Scott, one last question.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We have an older Linksys router, 2.4 megahertz, I guess it is. Megahertz. Is it worth taking down there and hooking up? Does it make any difference? Is there any advantage in packing that?
Well, you know, the biggest advantage, I guess the question is, you're coming down, you're going to have a rental, and more than likely, that's funny, Mom says she can hear us. More than likely, they are going to have one internet provider service. It's going to be a modem, router, switch, Wi-Fi, all in one device. And that's going to have a specific range in which you can use it. If you bring your own router down, one of the nice things about that is that if you do these sort of things, is you can control what DNS you're on. It can be pre-configured, so it could be one that you've used before, so your devices just connect to it, because all you need to do is just plug it in, and it's got the same Wi-Fi name, it's got the same Wi-Fi, same securities you're familiar with, things of that nature. Some of the other advantage you might have is if you needed more Wi-Fi in a part of where you're going to stay, then you could get a hold of a long Ethernet cable and put it at the end of the long Ethernet. And that would create another Wi-Fi pocket of that network in that area. I mean, I'm telling you things I know you know.
Yes.
But those are the only things I can think of that would help make the decision of whether it's worth bringing it down or not. Each Wi-Fi network, each device has its own characteristics. If it's one of your own, then you're probably familiar with what kind of performance it gets, what kind of, how robust the Wi-Fi signal is. For me, being the kind of person I am, I've traveled with routers often because I didn't want to take a chance that I wasn't going to get the performance that I was expecting. But even more recently, I've run into better technology than I have that I can bring. And so those pieces of equipment are sitting in a box on a shelf right now, and I'm not doing that anymore. So I think you're the best judge of whether you want to mess around with that particular Wi-Fi, whether it represents more work or less work or any advantage to just what's going to be sitting in the rental.
Yeah, well, this house is that we're moving going into is fairly small. Like if the Wi-Fi is in the living room, which is probably where it's at, it only has one wall to go through to get to the bedroom. So I'm thinking that it's not going to be a problem with the distribution. I'm guessing, and this is an old router that we bought years ago. I don't know if I've ever used it. So I think you've answered my question. We'll just leave it all.
Yeah, I think if it's a few years old, we've gone through some real security issues with specific name brand routers recently, like just in the last couple of years, that you would probably, if you were concerned about your security footprint, you would upgrade to a newer router, because those older routers, they're not upgrading the firmware in. So that security issue just exists in those older pieces of equipment. So coming into a vacation town, maybe you're actually just creating more headaches for yourself than it's worth. You're bringing a piece of equipment that needs to set up and work. It's an older piece of equipment, so it doesn't set up and work easy enough. I'm sorry, I do think I've already answered your question. As well as being a few years old, you may not just want to get rid of that router. You may not want to... You may not want a box of routers on your shelf like I have. You may want to just give it to Goodwill.
I'll put it right with the box of old cell phones and PDAs Palm Pilot, that's a PDA. All my box of obsolete, but not to be forgotten or thrown out, electronic devices.
Yes, until they mildew and things are growing in the box.
Do they biograde by any chance?
I have seen more plastic bags biodegrade than I've seen equipment biodegrade.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you pick up the bag of electronic devices and the bag disintegrates.
Right. Okay. But, I have had some, I have a phone over here the other day, the perfectly good old style classic Telcel phone. In fact, I might even be able to lay hands on it at some point because it's not too far away from me. And it fell off the shelf. And not only did pieces of it just splinter away, but there was a puff of dust just from the aged plastic just crumbling as it hit the ground. It just shattered.
I thought for sure you're going to tell me it hit the tile and shattered the tile.
Yeah, no, that's not in a cement-based house. But actually, this wasn't there either. This was in my office, the trailer. But just so old enough, the plastics just turns into dust.
Well, I've got some of them old, used to have some of those old plastic toys, the old original plastic toys. How do they, not Lucite, but they have Bakelite? I don't know what they are. But they would disintegrate. They would just literally shatter. After 30, 40 years, they tend to age.
Well, and I actually have some old CRT monitors still. Mostly at this point because I don't know what to do with them. I've had them so long, nobody wants them. I put a perfectly good working one a couple years ago out at the corner by the trash can, thinking if anybody knows what to do with these, the garbage men will know what to do with it. They'll look at it and go, oh, yeah, I can get a couple of bucks for that. I put a sign on it, says it's working, right?
Yeah.
And I come out later, the monitor is gone, but there is debris of monitor all over my driveway, all over the front road where I pull out of the driveway. Like what the garbage men decided to do is they decided to play kickball with it. And
you got to have some pretty solid shoes. You're going to do that.
It's a metaphor. I mean, what they did is they threw it up in the air and watched it explode as it hit the ground.
Yeah.
It had absolutely no value to them whatsoever. I'm like, great. I got four more of them. What am I going to do with those?
The thing that absolutely amazed me is the thickness of the glass that was in the front of those in the old TVs. That stuff is 3/4 of an inch thick. It's just amazing.
Yeah, well, and some of them, I mean, I've only hung on to monitors that have really good clarity. Some of them have better clarity than the LCDs that were originally produced to replace them.
Yeah.
Some of them you're taking a downgrade by going to a flat screen because the quality of the image that was being produced was a much lower resolution possible on LCD. Now that's not the case, but back then.
Okay, one last question.
Sure.
I got my Linux machine sitting here that has nothing but Linux on it. Can I petition it and put Windows on it retroactively, or do I have to pull the Linux off first?
Well, there are ways to do it retroactively. I've never done it myself. There are sets of instructions on there that will guide you through it, but it will be very painful because you will need to repartition your hard drive using Linux, install Windows, and then repair your grub bootloader. In essence, the repairing of the bootloader would be almost drive you to reinstall Linux in the first place.
It would make sense then just to wipe offload the Linux that I've got sitting. If I wanted something, I wanted to save it, install Windows and then petition and put Linux on it. Is that the right way?
I guess that's the way I would encourage you to do it, just because you're less likely to run into any problems, is back up anything from the Linux, accept a new installation. I mean, accept it like faith in God, accept that you're going to have a new Linux installation, right? And you're going to put your backed up data into that installation, but it's not going to be a restored installation. It's going to be a new installation. Just accept that and install, download Windows 10 onto a USB drive, format the whole thing as Windows 10, and Linux.
At the rates you charge, it'd be simpler for me to bring it there, give it to you, and say, here, do it.
Oh, yeah, no, I'll do that. you can hit me up for that work. I'd be happy to do it.
Okay. You answered my last question. I'm done. Move on, son.
Retro install. I'm just making a note. Retro install of Windows 10. Yeah, I think it's totally possible. I mean, let me reiterate. I think it's totally possible for any of you to do this kind of, to end up with that end result. But I think that's the most successful path to take, is install Windows 10 first, then Linux, because everything is there to help you through getting Linux on. Nothing is helping you make Windows work later, except for a bunch of techies that have made lists of things to do. I put a couple of questions on here, but they were just to stimulate ideas. I would be interested in any questions coming from any of you guys. And if we've run out of topics, I'll be happy to bring up my questions. Yay, Mom's here. You made it.
No, I've been here. Everything I pushed, I could get to you, but you couldn't see me or hear me. I had to keep searching for when I could get on, too. It's been hard. I thought I had it figured out, but clearly I was wrong.
Well, Mom, there's got to be something that's working against you. It's not all you, because you just popped up on my screen with a message saying, admit Sandy Stimson.
Well, Andy. I have sent you two other messages just prior to that saying, I can hear you, I can see you, but you don't know I'm here.
I saw your messages, and I didn't know you were there. You were not... No, there was no indication you're in the meet, and I don't think that's your fault. I think that's probably Google Meet.
Oh, my son's so sweet, trying to keep me from showing my lack of abilities. Thank you, son. Don't let others know.
I appreciate that, but I am also serious. I don't think it was all you.
Well, come up here and fix it.
Okay, so any other questions, problems we're trying to solve with technology? Any, you know, on my list of questions. Oh, sure, please. Go ahead, Chester.
I've been backing up my computer both on a external hard drive and also on OneDrive. Can I take my laptop and download or upgrade it, since I haven't used it in a very long time? Can I upgrade it from whatever is on this external hard drive or on OneDrive?
Can you upgrade it? Say that again. I'm sorry, there was some background noise there. I just muted a couple of people. Chester, you're talking about your external hard drive, and you want to back it up where?
No, I have. I've been backing up on an external hard drive as well as on OneDrive, which is okay. Microsoft in the cloud.
Yes, the Microsoft cloud, OneDrive.
Okay, could I then take my laptop, which I haven't used in months, and download the upgrade into my laptop?
You mean the files you've put in OneDrive? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you could take your laptop, depending on how long it's been since you've had it out. You may want to download and install a new version of Microsoft Office, because they offer updates periodically. And so at the very least, you'd want to make sure you're using the same version you're using on your main computer. And then when you go into OneDrive, you'll see the files that you've left there. And in OneDrive, in fact, I could probably bring it up here. In OneDrive, they use little icon indicators to let you know what is synchronized with the computer and what is in the cloud. I'm going there right now, and if you look, there's little green check marks next to my folders and files to indicate that that item exists both in my computer and it's synchronized to the cloud. If there's something in your case, like your laptop, you're going to go to it, and it's going to synchronize with the cloud, what would appear would be these little clouds, these little gray clouds instead of that green check mark, if you follow me. And what that indicates is that it's available as long as you're online. And so if any of those things needed to be on your computer, they would be synchronizing over to your computer. Let me say that differently. There are settings in OneDrive to synchronize everything over to your laptop, or to only synchronize those things that you need. And the things that you need are set by a time limit, like 30 days. And the idea is to optimize the amount of space on your laptop to only those items that you are currently working on. Now, you may or may not have that configured. It's a checkbox and some settings in the settings of OneDrive that you can set. But I think by default, it's turned off. And so if I remember right, by default, what'll happen when you sign into OneDrive is it'll use your current internet connection to start bringing copies of those files from from OneDrive into the local hard drive of that laptop.
Okay,
does that answer? Say that again, Chester.
I'll give it a try.
Yeah, yeah. And then if you find that you've got too much stuff, then explore the settings for space setting, for space saving in OneDrive. Because it'll make a decision on all your documents, what is it, and prioritize those things you're most currently working on, like over the last 30 days or the last 90 days. Or it might even, you might even set it up so that the only things that are in the laptop are those things you went after. So you're working on a project that's in OneDrive, and then the moment you open it up, it saves it to your hard drive, and you're working off of your hard drive.
I'd want to pick up everything.
Everything. So I'd stay away from those space-saving settings and just verify you have enough space on the laptop, which is pretty easy because if you're subscribed to Office, you've got 1 terabyte of space, and still most laptops, that's the max that they're running with. But unless you've gone out and intentionally bought a laptop and had them install 2 terabytes, it's very uncommon to have more than a terabyte of space in any of these devices.
I think I have at least a terabyte, maybe more.
In the laptop?
In the laptop.
Okay. Did you do that intentionally? Did you have that upgraded?
Well, I really can't remember, but yeah. The laptop is reasonably new, where the computer that I use is old. It's a, you know, it's a a Mac I've run Windows on.
Yeah, yeah, I'm familiar with it. The laptop, yeah, you can buy 1 terabyte laptops, but you go out, it's not the norm. It's something that you've paid extra for.
Well, I think I paid $1,000 for the thing, so it should have a maximum, pretty much maximum.
Yeah. Hey, if that's answered your question, Chester, and
yes,
nobody else
thank
has
you.
any other questions, I've got a couple of questions on here that don't really matter, because what's just stimulated in my mind was a laptop that Richard and I had been talking about over this last week that I don't know if you guys are familiar with, but it's called the Framework Laptop. They've gotten some mention in some publications out there. But the idea of the Framework Laptop is that it's intentionally a upgradable computer. It's a form factored like an Ultrabook, but it's designed to have the memory, the hard drive, the motherboard, all replaceable. And all the parts that are built in it are meant to be serviceable. And if you can see this on your screen now, it's at frame.work. And this is the product that you use. This is what it looks like. It's a 13-inch laptop. And this is what it looks like on the inside. This is a picture of the motherboard in hand. As we go down here, you see it's got the form factor of an Ultrabook like a Macintosh. But then this whole face cover comes off, and you have access to all the parts that make it what it is. You see how that faceplate comes off of there? Here's a breakdown picture of all the parts in it. And what I'm not seeing yet, that I'm gonna follow one of these links so you guys can see it, or you can look it up. Let me put the link in the chat. And because I'm bringing it up, of course, I'll put it in our follow-up blog post. These things on the side, these little modules, if you can make them out, make up the ports on the side of the laptop, and it allows you to shape which kinds of communication you would want on the laptop. Let me follow one of these and get some more perspective pictures here somewhere. Configure now. There we go. So this laptop, slightly expensive, because at $750, that's the low end price. That's without memory and without first and secondary storage. That's without RAM chips, and that's without a storage device in it. At $750, you're bringing those things to it. They've got the breakdown here of what's available for the specs. And this is what an expansion card looks like. You see that action? They're little modules that fit into the bottom base of the laptop. And that module could be a USB-C. It could be a USB-A with 3.2 or higher, USB 3.2 or higher. It could be an HDMI port. You can imagine now, you can could have more than one HDMI port. It could be a display port, which is another standard of video out. Display ports are very impressive because you can run multiple monitors off of the same cable. It could be a micro SD. Yeah, it's very cool. This modular approach, and here you could add more storage. This would be a storage. I don't know if you can make it out, but each one of these modules is actually a USB port, a USB plug-in, or a USB-C connector. That's what I'm trying to say. And this is a 1 terabyte to 250 gigabyte storage module that has a USB-C port on it. You could literally pull that out of this laptop and plug it into a different laptop. There's a stack of these modules. Yeah, it's really well thought out. All of this is intended to be serviced. So if you were frustrated with buying devices like Apple devices at that high, you're paying a premium cost, and then you're the only recycling you have is to throw it back in the market and buy another. Hopefully somebody like Apple has a trade-in by the time you're ready to get into the latest technology. This is an answer to that kind of frustration. This is a company that is starting now, and they're trying to approach that whole concept. One of the things I've been saying since the new Mac generation has come out is that I'm done buying PCs until the PC market shakes out. I'm either going to buy one of the new Macs, the M1 Macintoshes, because I see that as the future of where we're going. I'm either going to buy that, or I'm just going to hold off until there is a PC equivalent. And I know that Qualcomm and Microsoft are working on a chipset that's equivalent in the PC world. And so I'm either going to be buying I've been planning to buy a Macintosh, an M1 Macintosh in the used market. I see the M2 or the M1X is coming out fairly shortly. And there'll be a bunch of these original M1s that'll dump onto the marketplace. And I'm thinking I'll try and pick one up cheap then, because I understand exactly what I would be buying, and I'd be getting a great price on it. This is my whole plan. And then I come across this laptop. And this laptop, what you learn from this kind of engineering. Well, Chester, what I'm saying about this is selling in the PC market, but because you see that motherboard come right out. As long as this company stays around, if we get the PC equivalent, this Qualcomm with Microsoft thing that would be into the next generation, we could see this motherboard being replaced with a future motherboard, which is unheard of right now in the laptop space. That you'd buy a laptop now, and 3 or 4 years down the line, you're pulling out a motherboard and sticking in a completely different style motherboard to move forward with this technology. That's what I find so fascinating. Chester, to answer your question about the boot camp, that's to be able to run Windows on a Macintosh platform. The new Macintosh platform, this M1 platform, they've got versions of Windows running on it, but it's the Windows on ARM model, and there isn't a lot of Windows on ARM that's going on right now. So even though you can run it, there's a lot of software you don't have access to, if that answers your question. Wait, are you still there? Yeah, you're... Can people hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. So what this is representing is buy a premium looking computer with lots of possibilities of expanding into the future. And they're committing to this design footprint.
What do they charge for that? Do you know?
Well, their base model is $749. And I've looked at it. That is without a storage device, without a hard drive, and without the RAM chips. So you have that additional expense with it. Fred, you just put in the chat that you have one of these, really? Is your mic working?
I have one.
Oh, please tell us about it, Fred.
I'm running a 480 SSD on it. If anybody's played with a Raspberry Pi, now you can run Windows on it on a Raspberry Pi.
Okay, but we're talking about
64-bit.
But we are talking about this framework laptop, right? Is this what you were referring to when you said you have one?
The same thing with. I have a Raspberry Pi, the 400, and the Raspberry Pi by itself is a keyboard. It's no bigger than a keyboard, and you can add stuff to it. I've got a 480 solid-state drive that I've added to it. I can plug it into my TV and use the TV for the monitor, so I get it into a motel and want to work on my computer and just hook it up to the TV. And a lot of stuff you can do with it. They're up to, like I said, 64-bit programs on it.
Well, Fred, I love the Raspberry Pi. We've got a Raspberry Pi 4 here in the house, and it's a great hacker's computer. But what it's not is it's not a nice, refined computer that you would take to work with you or you'd travel with. It's a hacker's computer to travel with.
Hang on a second. I'll go get mine.
Okay. And what this is your Ultrabook, like your Intel-based Ultrabook, as an upgradable computer. Its performance is right alongside many computers in the marketplace. However, the difference is you're able to do all this expansion yourself. It's not a rigid product. And that's, I can see how you'd relate that to the Raspberry Pi line, because it's not a rigid product. It's a very flexible product.
Is that an American product?
British. I believe, but the equipment would be outsourced
to. It's British.
Are you talking about the Framework laptop?
It's British.
Or the Raspberry Pi, Fred?
Raspberry Pi is British.
Okay. And this Framework laptop is, I believe it's an American company, but of course all their parts are. Yeah, so you can buy a laptop for your Raspberry Pi. You can get it as a kit. This is what Fred's showing us. I'm trying to expand you, Fred, into full screen, and I'm not able to do it for some reason. Why isn't it working? There we go.
How do you, Fred, connect that to your ATV, a smart TV?
Yeah.
Oh, now you're on video. Okay, let's see it, Fred.
Okay. Here's the whole thing. This is the whole Raspberry Pi, minus the solid-state drive, which is on the side, and the power supply. But everything is in this. And, you know, what we have here is RS-232. GPIB is underneath this. They put a tape over the top of it so you don't sit there and screw things up. And then you can put a SD card, mini SD in there. There's two, you can run two screens at the same time on it. You know, you plug this right straight into your TV. It's an HDMI.
Fred, do you know the model of that? Yeah. You bought the Raspberry Pi. You bought that with the Raspberry Pi already in it, or did you have to build it?
No, the whole thing comes. It's.
Well, what's the kit cost?
I sent you a link. That's the whole kit. That comes with a power supply, the Raspberry Pi, a mouse. What else came with it? I've forgotten. I bought a camera.
Yeah, I want to look for the link right now. Did you send it to me recently?
I just sent it. It's up on the chat.
Oh, it's on the chat. Oh, there it is, right there.
Yeah, and this thing cost me, without the SSD card, about less than $150. And you can run Windows on it.
Oh, that's fun.
And you can run Linux on it.
Now, the Windows that's licensed to it, is it a graphic-based version? Because it wasn't when they originally started.
It is now. It's a 64-bit.
But you have a graphic interface when you run Windows on it? Or have you tried Windows on it yet?
I have not tried it.
So what are you running on it right now? It's a Linux that came with it?
Linux. I'm running
GeekPi. That's a great price, and the fact that it comes all inclusive in a keyboard makes it very accessible.
It also comes with this.
Oh, hold on a second. I'm not looking at you. Let me see you. Where are you? Here we go. The official beginner's guide. This is an awesome thing for the computer club. If you guys were hobbyists, that's great fun. And people are using Raspberry Pis for things like media centers and security systems. Bill and I had been talking a while back about home automation, and they had a version of that you could run on your Raspberry Pi and make that the center of your home automations.
Well, I'm running a couple of cameras on my house and feeding them to a Raspberry Pi server.
That's very cool, Fred. I bet there's many of us that would be interested in more information about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you do the camera stuff, what are you using for the cameras? Are they off-the-shelf cameras, or have you...
Off-the-shelf, or you can sit there, and if you want to plug them into the GPIB on there, you can get the little tiny $30 cameras. I got, the two I'm using on my house are Reolink, and I got them on sale for right at $60 each. And like Bill says, if somebody rings the doorbell, they don't have to ring the doorbell on my place. If they come into the field of view, it rings on my telephone, which is nice when UPS comes.
Yeah. So you've got cameras from your security system coming back. What do you use for your security system on the pod?
I've got a friend that just, took a couple days, put some software together. Works fine.
Oh, so you don't know the name of it, though. I wonder if it's the same thing that Bill and I were looking at. What was that called? I used to have it right here behind me. I haven't run it in a long time. I was running in a virtual machine, and it would find all my Internet of Things devices and allow me to set up home automation.
Right.
I don't know if that sounds familiar.
Nope, that doesn't. But the thing I liked about this, it was so small that, here's my bag. I carry it in. Everything I need, including a 480 gig drive, SSD drive, is in there.
So does this mean you've given up on the Macintosh stuff?
Heaven forbid, no.
So really what you're doing is you're carrying more than one computer with you now.
Well, I have about four computers. Two of the iPads and two one MacBook Air and one MacBook Pro that came out, the new one.
The M1, the one that I'm just oogling over, right?
Same one.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking on.
No, you look great. Sounds good, too. I mean, I look here. What I've done recently, the reason my meeting is working is because I offloaded some of my jobs to my old Mac Mini. And so I've got two computers doing a job that I know your one computer would be able to do without a problem. But trying to do it all on my one computer, there's no headroom to do anything else. I try to open up a web page or look something up, do a Google search, and I'm already at 100% CPU and almost 100% memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm having the same problem with the new one.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, it pops up and tells me that I'm about out of memory.
What are you doing that's so memory intensive?
I have no idea. I keep getting rid of stuff, and it still pops up.
Well, it would be stuff that's running that you're getting rid of, right? You're stopping things from running.
Well, like I have an open window to my bank. Well, I'm not on with the bank, but I just forgot to close it, that kind of thing.
Are you running Chrome? Maybe you could just blame it on Chrome. Chrome has just turned into a crazy memory hog.
Well, I use Chrome, I use Firefox, and I use Safari.
And you still find you're having... Wow, are you running all the browsers at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I run multiple browsers as well, but one of the things that I really notice is that you have this memory footprint from each one of those browsers to begin with. And then you've got whatever each one of those browsers is doing. And in some cases, it's better to just use one particular browser for all your tasks that are happening. Like what we're doing here, I try and have Chrome be everything. I try not to have multiple because it's just got to set aside that sandbox of memory for that one for that other browser. Do we need to let you go, Fred? Well, that's really cool. It is not. I mean, I'm glad that Fred brought that out because I really think that's a very cool computer. The computer that's in that keyboard is the same computer that people are loading up media centers on, and they're loading up file servers on. They're using them for like Fred said,
Okay, what did you do, Scott?
Well, why? What's wrong? Did I break something?
Well, you're breaking up like crazy.
Can I say something while we're waiting for him?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been waiting. I have a new show. Have you heard of Vigil?
No.
Vigil. It's BBC. It is so good. We found it on Radiosity. It's just been released. The episode is really worth watching. We've watched it three times. It is an amazing filming kind of achievement. And the story is fabulous. It's a thriller mystery kind of story. It's fabulous. You spend most of the time in a submarine, a nuclear submarine. That's the best thing I have seen in months and months. 3 months on TV.
That's your recommendation for today. And it's a mini series on Netflix.
Well, no, I don't think you'll find it there. You have to find it on Radiosity, or if you have BBC, it's every Sunday on BBC. It's supposed to be released in the U.S., and I'm not sure if it's going to be released on iApple. I'm not sure if it's that one or another one, but it's not our normal Netflix, Prime. I don't think it's those two at all.
Apple TV, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Does anybody have anything else they'd like to recommend?
I do.
Books? Oh, Paul, go right ahead.
Well, I've been scanning several things in Netflix, along with my standard things to watch, which is Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee and the Sex Education. But I've been looking at New Girl, which is a sitcom about a girl that moves in with three guys. It's sort of like Three's Company, except in reverse. But the girl is Zoe Deschanel, one of my favorite actresses, because she plays the ukulele really well. But then, if anybody's interested in river kayaking, I watched The River Runner. It's about a guy that's so serious about running these rivers that are just like waterfalls and whitewater the whole way, you know. And
is that a documentary?
It's a documentary. They started a group of three or four guys started river running in California. And they had a cheap video camera that they were just documenting for themselves what they were doing. And then the more they did it and the farther afield they went, they got better video equipment. So they wanted to run these four rivers in India that originate at one of these huge high peaks, you know. And these people are serious. At one time, the guy says, well, last year, seven kayakers drowned, and four of them were in our group. So it's real serious kayaking.
Wow.
And then I'm watching Norsemen. Is anybody watching Norsemen?
I have watched that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes. It's
a Norwegian, circus, you know.
Yeah, you're thinking of Monty Python. It's a Norwegian Monty Python.
Monty Python. It's the same kind of humor.
It's so well done.
And then I'm watching Love in the Spectrum, which is about high-functioning autistic people that are trying to date and find happiness, get married, have kids, and the problems they face. But Love in the Spectrum, those are the ones I'm watching.
Love in the Spectrum. Is that a movie?
It's a series.
Oh, a series.
I just watched Mercury Rising again for last night while you were speaking about this. And it was good. I enjoyed it.
I can't remember what that is. I remember thinking it was good, but I can't remember what it is. Mercury Rising.
Well, it's about a 9-year-old autistic kid that breaks some unbreakable code. And, the FBI is involved. It's his name?
Is that on Netflix?
Bruce Willis.
It is on Netflix. I just did a Google search of it. An outcast FBI agent is assigned to protect a 9-year-old autistic boy who becomes the target of an assassin after he cracks a top secret government code. I remember this. This is a good movie.
It was. I enjoyed it. It's the second or third time.
I wrote it down.
It's another reminder that Bruce Willis used to be a good actor.
That was probably the first one we realized he could act.
There's only got one good movie then.
But he's got it five times. We're talking about Die Hard, right?
Yeah.
I put a note up in the messages. Did you see it?
I think I got it up right here. This is what you're talking about here, Fred. You're about to install this.
Yes.
And just FYI, we got the 10-minute warning on the meeting time.
Okay.
So what does this do?
It goes into your breaker to your house and protects everything inside of the house.
Is this similar to what Big Don used to install? the surge breaker?
I would assume it's the same, Scott.
Yeah.
You install this in a split breaker, and it's supposed to take care of your whole house.
So is it a surge protector type thing?
That's exactly what it is.
Who else had one of those? Was checking the monitoring?
That was Big Don.
No, somebody in the computer club. When we
Paul had something that the insurance company gave him.
Animax that cuts off if you before your equipment browns out.
Oh.
If it drops below 90 volts, it cuts off and comes back.
It's supposed to ground like lightning strikes and stuff like that. So basically, it's working wire strip, but your strip's good for one good shot.
Expensive or
$110 or something like that. Another $15 or so for the breaker.
Wow, that is much more expensive than what Don was doing his stuff with.
Yeah, he was doing a grounding thing, like a.
Yeah, I've got one installed. It's on my mains, and it's a surge. It's in case of lightning strike, all the electricity. It just burns out the link. So if you get hit by electricity, if you get hit by lightning, then after the lightning, you may not have power to your house because you're physically disabled from the main electricity. It burns up the link to your house so that your house doesn't burn up. I'm assuming this is the same kind of product. Does that sound right, Fred?
Well, I haven't seen where it says something about burns out links. From what I understand, you put a split breaker in for that, both phases on your house, and it shunts it, from what I understand.
From damaging effects, electrical surges. Yeah, well, and that may just be the way, because Don built his product. He did a bunch of research and figured out how to build his product because his house caught on fire in San Carlos when he got hit by lightning. And he did research from engineering in Hermosillo. There was a group there that was studying this kind of stuff. And
okay.
So this looks like it's more similar to the surge protectors that we are familiar with, the ones that allow electricity to come through unless it hits too high a current, and then it'll shunt it, like you said. It'll burn up that material instead of burning up your house until the material's gone, and then it's no longer doing any protection. That's kind of the way it looks. We may have to have a follow-up on that. Whole house surge protection. I'm curious what the tolerances are on a device like that, if it's even worth introducing into, like, the United... Mom, you're creating all kinds of noise over there.
Sorry, I didn't know that was me. I am going to say goodbye. I have to go help paint.
Okay.
Bye.
Have fun painting. Goodbye.
Bye.
We have to get going and load the cars. So
we got to say goodbye anyway because we've only got 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
Was there any other recommendations before we get out of here?
No time to watch TV this week. So.
Well, we look forward to having you guys in San Carlos. It's just a little bit more to go now, right?
Well, a month, but yeah.
But you'll be journeying for a month, right?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Hopefully, staying put in Vegas for 3 weeks, as long as it's comfortable.
Oh, hey, before I forget, there's just the six of us here, or the five of us here right now. I'm getting solar panels installed.
Oh, cool.
So look forward to, I'll bring some photos and descriptions as it's happening. I've been resealing my roof, and they delivered the panels yesterday, and in the next month, they will do the installation, and I'll have, the way I understand it, I've got 18 panels. I've got micro inverters that are Internet of Things devices, so they will hook to the Wi-Fi, and I'll be able to check with my phone what kind of voltage production that I've got. And after they're installed, I'll have a new meter and a new contract with the CFE to feed them electricity and build credit for the times of high usage. If you guys are familiar with the Mexican electric utility bill, it goes three tiers. If you use too much, you end up paying in the highest tier. And the idea is to accumulate credit in in the off season when we don't need air conditioning, so that we can apply that to the usage in the high season and keep yourself down in that most minimal tier.
Cool. Is that kind of like what Jim put in?
It's exactly like what Jim put in.
Yeah,
exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So I'll be bringing you some photos and updates of what's happening over here.
Cool.
Very cool, cool indeed. Good for you.
Talk to everybody next week.
All right, guys. Everybody. Until next Tuesday. It's been fun. I always enjoy talking with you. Until good next travels. Tuesday, tech on.
Bye-bye.
Tech on, Fred. Bye-bye. Tech on, Cheryl. Adios. Thanks for everything, Fred. That was great. Good information.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you later.
See what you find out. I'll talk to you next week.
Excellent. Adios.
Bye.
Well, there you have it. That was the San Carlos Computer Club. And I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions and the San Carlos Computer Club. I am the eternal guest host, I guess, of this meeting, which has been a virtual meeting since COVID. And at the moment, there's no foreseeable end in sight. I don't see us meeting in person this year. Maybe we'll consider it for next year, but not this season. So it would probably be after next summer if we were going to have an in-person meeting. Other than that, we'll continue to keep these meetings rolling every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Arizona Sonoran time. We are in Sonora, and in this state in Mexico, we observe daylight savings the same way people in Arizona do. We don't. So check your times. Make sure you're here at the right time. Again, if you need to get a hold of me, the website's right there, internationalcs.net. You can email Scott at internationalcs.net. If you're interested in the computer club, check out the website. I keep a podcast there. You can search for that, the San Carlos Computer Club, anywhere you get your podcasts. Check out our website, sccclub.org. And contact me directly if you are looking for any kind of computer help out there on the internet. I will reach through the internet and help you with your computer remotely. I guess that's it. Until next Tuesday, you guys have a great day and tech on.